This is the Senate Committee on Labor, Consumer, and Business Affairs, meeting in Hearing Room A at 1 o'clock p.m. on Wednesday, March the 16th.
I think our together do it. Let's put it in the room.
I'm
well, now that I thought, Mr. Chairman, it may be my problem. I think I thought he was going to ask it, but I won't admit that I did. It's really my problem. I hope that helps. Oh, where am I? Somehow it's going to be better than me. Well, I think it'd be just best to go some examples. We went to the Insurance Commission and picked up some insurance policies now presently approved by the state of Oregon, and that's the exhibit that you have before you, and so the examples of difficulty with insurance policies. And what we did is we did not, we did at random pick out, we didn't just try to find difficult clauses from various policies, and you can read the names of those. I don't want to embarrass anyone, but the first is from a life insurance policy.
Look at that.
That's just
always in your attention.
Okay. And that's one approved by the state. And I'm not going to give a name of the policy, but you have it in front of you. I don't want to embarrass anyone. The first test on that is a minus six. The next is a homeowner policy, it's a buyer policy, and the plus on that is a plus seven. And, you know, we're really talking about above college level ability to read these policies, and I think it's unfortunate that you need that kind of reading ability to read a standard policy. And the workman's comp, another plus test is 21, and then there's another liability policy that's a 32. And as Senator Gray remembers when I testified earlier, there are not all bad guys out there in the real world. And I do want to point to some good guys in this particular field. We took a standard insurance policy for him, for instance.
Standard insurance or just a standard?
No, a standard insurance for a company form. And it is very easy to read. Incidentally, that was a test we ran on that, Jerry.
I'm sorry, I didn't do a test on that one, but I would guess it would be about, the limit under 40.
It is unique. And you'll be hearing testimony later on from the Insurance Services Office of a particular form that is out for auto insurance. Now, I did not include auto insurance in my testimony because someone else has an auto insurance bill, and I just didn't want to get involved in somebody else's field. But there are good guys in this particular industry, but there are a lot of bad guys. And there is no reason why we can't make requirements that information that citizens must gain from various policies be in a written in a readable manner. It's sort of interesting to note, I asked Senator Carson to be on one of these reading bills, and after he read the bill, he said, guys, he said, what a bunch of hypocrisy. He says, I can't read that bill. I'm an attorney. I can't read that bill. And here you're asking me to go on a reading bill that helps other people read. So we also have this session, and I hope it comes to your committee, bills that we require statutes and bills to be written in a readable manner also.
You mean as far as the language is concerned to Senator Wingard or...
Well, both. There should be a certain type level. If you look at insurance policies, and we have some before, you look at the small print back on that other example I expressed to you. In the second policy, the homeowner policy, it's very difficult to read the very small print there. And there should be no reason for that, that I can logically see. When you've seen the good examples that can happen.
What is this plus system? Is a minus six, is that harder to read or easier to read?
Very difficult.
Seven.
Very difficult to read. 100 is the best, the easiest to read. 160 is Reader's Digest. And college levels, the
college levels are between 30 and 50. And
so plus seven is still hard to read, but a minus.
Very difficult to read.
Anything in the 30s can be a grad school level.
Now, I could give you one example, and I think I will. Yeah, here it is. Now, here's a section from the insurance policy. Yeah, okay. That's in larger print. I can see it better.
We have a question from the insurance policy before Dr. Fletcher's treatment of this particular section. Notice to any agent or knowledge possessed by any agent or by any other person shall not affect a waiver or a change in any part of this policy or stop the company from asserting any right under the terms of this policy, nor shall the terms of this policy be waived or changed except by endorsement issued to form a part of this policy. Now that requires 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and a half sentences. In a sentence and a half, it can be said this way. Waivers or changes of your coverage or our rights are valid only with a written endorsement to this policy. I know that you're going to hear arguments that legally we may make major changes. My argument to that is when people understand what's in a policy, you're going to have a lot fewer legal problems, both as from a company standpoint and from the individual standpoint. I just don't buy the argument that you're going to change a good amount of law by changing policies so they can be read and understood by the average citizen. Now, I'm going to ask Gary just to mention very briefly the flex system and how it works. It works in a combination of counties, of syllables, and of the length of the sentence. And he can express it very quickly. He's the one that did the calculations on these particular sections of law, which I don't think anyone else has done, as a matter of fact, especially on the insurance policy law of the state of Oregon. Gary, do you want to give him a quick rundown on the flex system?
Sure. Part of the problem with the reading flex system is that depending on the subject matter that you're analyzing, and usually the subject matter has a lower rating. So all of these scores are variable, you know, plus or minus 5 or 10. The same thing that I mentioned, it's a combination of the syllables and the number of words, and the number of words per sentence. And, for example, there are some sentences which have been 60 words long, plus have an average of 1.6 syllables. Now, that would be a very low rating and difficult to read, or perhaps 10 or 20. There are other sentences which are, most normal sentences that are more like 20 words long, the syllables are maybe 1.4 syllables per word. And we would have a rating of closer to 40 or 50. And it's that type of language that we'd like to see. And I think probably the best example of this is in, for example, the easy to read insurance policy is the Century Clean Talk policy. That's an auto insurance policy. And if you just take a look at that, not language and the type of print, also the print has to be 10 point print, which is a fairly large print. That makes it easier to read. Another part of the flex system is that columns must be 4 inches wide and no longer than 4 inches wide.
That concludes our testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Happy to hear you,
Gary.
Any questions?
Yeah. I think it would be more effective style insurance policies that would be written from now on. That was just suggesting.
That's what we're suggesting. The insurance commission would now approve insurance policies, as I understand it, for the state. And he would set up a system. He could do this now. If he wanted to establish the flex system as a standard for approving a policy, and he may testify that he is planning on doing that. If that's all it takes, that's fine. But I think we should try to move in this direction if we can.
Are insurance policies written on a state-by-state basis, or are they written on some kind of national basis?
They're both. My understanding, you're going to hear testimony that's one of the problems. They may write a policy for a particular area, for instance. But, now you have particularly catastrophe potentials in a particular area that's a tri-state area, they may write a standard policy for that tri-state area. And I would only suggest to you that simplifying our language would actually help other states. If we can help our brethren, maybe we should.
You know what? We hear the arguments made that there'll be some kind of fiscal impact, that it's going to cost a lot more money and that's this kind of change.
Well, I'm sure that would be an argument. However, I would think the fact you don't have to sit and explain to someone every sentence would actually in the long run save money. I really would, Senator. I graduated from Oregon State, maybe that's why I can't read that. But I can't read insurance policies. My fire insurance policies. I with the little tabs of paper attached here and there and the referred in that, I really have it.
I'm not going to read the same, but I didn't graduate from Oregon State, and I have trouble reading the school. One other question. Sometimes I think that all of the legalese that one finds in an insurance policy is because of the need for the legalese to maybe protect the insurance company, to be absolutely exact and use the language of lawyers and these things. And that's why it's so hard for us lay persons to understand it. Do you know whether there's any real need for insurance policies to be so worded from the standpoint of exactitude or whatever else?
I was told once the reason why attorneys are so wordy is that originally from the old English law they were paid by the number of words that they wrote, the number of pages. No, I may not be accurate in that, sir, but that's my understanding of the history.
And you answered that that's the reason. Yes, sir. So I would like to be a witness on this.
And,
biblical
reference. We have come to that system of, I think that is right. I don't know, maybe somebody wise knows, but I think it is right. The original scribes were paid by the word and by the page. And I think we've got to get over that syndrome in this modern age. I don't think that happens now, but I think there is a carryover, and I
if I read the bill that we asked for, and you mentioned problems with the bill and also the statutes, I think that the same language affects both of those areas too. And hopefully, if we can bring about this reform, maybe we can move in other directions.
I'll be happy to have you try to help me get those bills through too.
Anyway, if you read Don Earl Moore's old man, not yet. That's an insurance policy.
Have you read them
all? No, I haven't.
That's the point I wanted to bring.
I tried to
get attention. What I would, how many people read their insurance policy? They take their agent's word for what's in it rather than reading the policy. And I don't know if you had to put bold in bold type on a policy. Would the average citizen read it, whether it's because they don't understand the language or not, or they're just not interested to take their agent's word for what's in that policy, I'm not sure. But there, most people are like yourself, they don't really. I was in the insurance business for many years, and I think this has been my experience, that they just wouldn't still take trouble with it. Regardless, and I don't know what this is going to do, if they would read it, if they would know it.
I think they would understand better their rights under the policy if it was easy for them to read. I think a lot of people throw up their hands when they try to read the policy. And I'm quite sure in some cases, I bet some of the agents don't know what's in those policies.
I'm sure that's true. Any other questions? If not, thank you, Gary.
What is it?
interpret it for court purposes.
co-signing of a note is considered a material benefit. We're going to be. On page 6, the addition of city unlawful trade practices, the false and misleading representations of facts concerning the offering price or cost of real estate goods or services, and then the failure to disclose or any known material defects, that's in the key. And then section 4 of the bill on page 7 is the unconscionable conduct section that we've talked about. The rest of the attorney is just bringing in section 4 into the rest of the act. Except on page 11, that's the private right of action. Section 4 is not brought in. Again, there's no private right of action for the section dealing with unconscionable tactics. The change in subsection 2 on page 11 just conforms to Senate, existing Senate Bill 218. In section 3, subsection 3 on page 11, this is a frivolous action attorney fee for the defendant's possibility of speech to prevent frivolous actions under the private right. And then again on the last page of the bill, the section that extends the protection of what it amounts to is warranty protection for the buyer of goods when he's involved in a conversion situation where the sales contract is converted to a loan. All in all, the Department of Justice considers it to be a very good bill. It really strengthens the consumer's hand, and we feel highly recommend passage of it.
Senator, what's the amendment? So, there's the amendment to Senate Bill 269. Are there any objections? The amendment is so ordered. Mr. Minowat, yes. Senator Wyatt, you are from National Earth to refer to the B-Pass recommendation. Senator Wyatt, you are Senate Bill 269 to refer to the B-Pass recommendation. And, raise the question. Staff, clerk, roll. Call the roll.
Senator Jensen?
Aye.
Senator Roberts?
Aye.
Senator Troy?
Aye.
Senator Wyatt?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Senator Wyatt, there's still a lot of work in the room. We appreciate if someone asked you a serious thing.
Thank you.
Senate Bill 285. You know, this is a bill that we have had a hearing on, and if you're ready to vote on it, fine. If not, I'd like to. We have an explanation of the need for this bill on Senate Bill 385 and measure intent statement to get passed out by Rick Glenn.
Mr. Chairman,
Okay, can you see?
Now we'll go back to you. Can't go 606.
As far as the license
industry is
concerned. They actually do. Isn't some of the same policies anyway?
My understanding is that not only me, but the state was going up for a hearing yesterday, so I called back to Washington and was told that they tried this by experiment in Pennsylvania by regulation, and it was found to be unworkable. But I know there must be a reason why, and I know that reason should be obtainable.
I think that, you know, that is evidence would be more understandable if it were more complete.
Fine. You know, I better ask him. Information for this afternoon.
The NAIC, it is also my understanding, the NAIC now has a task force working on the simplification of a automobile and a homeowner policy. I think this is the two areas where there is the greatest concern. And representing the life insurance industry, it just doesn't seem practical to use this particular test. I've read the bill and tried to understand how it works out in the formula. I just don't frankly understand it as well as Senator Lingard and his aide. It may be a good thing, but frankly, I just don't understand it, and I would hate to see a law passed that would mandate all policies to make this particular requirement. I think that's the end of my testimony.
Any further questions?
You think the duration is really improved. When you're talking about nationwide, can you give examples of variations that might have on low-meaning and low-meaning, middle-meaning, middle-meaning, someplace else? Or would that be possible?
Well, over a period of time, Senator, contracts have developed and courts have interpreted to mean a certain thing, and as a result well, this is entirely possible. I guess I'd have to say yes, sometimes that happens. Hopefully, the courts will interpret the same, as long as they're interpreting the same statute. But they have, over a period of time, pretty well settled on what a particular phrase means. The courts have determined that, and that's the phrase then that's used in all policies, because everybody knows what that means.
Any further questions? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Robert. You're only two. The company's bill to require an insurance policy for us to be readable, not only in terms of the word used, but in the print type. Do you have the ability to represent your company, the state of the large print copies of the policies for those individuals who may have difficulty in reading smaller text?
I don't know.
Do you have anything else? I'm sure that you do sell policies or have people sign agreements for two policies
I don't know how, I know we don't have any bail either, so
that's true, because you did
We have policies sold to people who don't use it, basically.
I feel that we do. And we do sell them. Would a blind person be eligible to buy a life insurance policy?
Well, what it says, to reiterate what my statement means, simply, or my question simply means that I would like to know whether or not you're selling policies to individuals who cannot deal with their family. And I also realize there are some people who cannot, or which are born in Sweden, and I'm sure they're tired of having life insurance and such those things. I understand what your company is doing about making sure they're not the same. And I also mean that I'd like to know if there are individuals who are not born, but who do have a solid parent, but for those that are married, to enable them to understand or to either by sight or by sound of sin, they know what they're saying.
Well, I don't think so. I don't think I'm going to give you a satisfactory or complete answer, Senator, but I really think the policy once it is written, and I requested to deliver in person to the policyholder and answer any questions that the policyholder has at that time. I would think that if a person had difficulty in reading, that I would hope and we would go over the policy, what's in it for the person. I would have hoped that you would have done that at the time you took the application, so that the person in the time of the application knew what he was applying for.
Senator, I would speak also when he's getting the senator better known company, send a magnifying glass along with every policy.
That would be a good practice, I would think. Yeah, and I realize too that there are other occupations, other activities that students learn the same kind of problems as certain things as it would in dealing with someone who has an entire child. I'm just curious as to whether or not you think it's a standard
instructive
approach to that problem.
I've never really been asked that question, but we do have another policy, however, in practice, and that is that the policy owner who has delivered his policy has 10 days in which he doesn't like anything that's in it, or if he feels that he is pressured into buying it, he can return it and have his premium refunded. What we call the 10 day free look.
Senator Troll? Do you agree with Senator Robert? Senator Troll?
No. Yes, Mr. Johnson, it's true that the policies are very difficult to read, and I think most of us would attest that they are. That means then that the person buying the policy is very, very much dependent upon the agent who's selling it, the insurance agent who's selling it. What kind of training do you have for such agents so that you know that they're accurately interpreting the policy to the individual buying it?
Well, before I answer directly your question, I would first have to say that I don't necessarily agree with you that the policies and standard books are difficult to read. I would wish you would look at this one and see if you...
I didn't know that. It looks improved over other policies, I think.
I required by a recent regulation of the Insurance Commission to take pre-examination education and training program. There's a bill introduced, sponsored by the Oregon Life Underwriters in this session of the legislature, to require post-licensing continual training education by insurance agents. Senator Senator Johnson, he has his own in-service training program in which it keeps the patients informed of as to developments in particularly with regards to their own policies.
Is it something like the Code of Ethics for insurance agents and some kind of professional review of what's happening out there so we don't have malfeasance or malpractice or whatever?
Well, they're regulated by the insurance commissioner and complaints lodged against any insurance agent by either a policyholder or another agent are subject to review by the insurance commissioner.
And has the insurance commissioner reviewed such cases and taken action against the agent?
I feel certainly that they have. Now, there is a representative of the insurance commissioner's office that is going to testify on this bill that could probably answer that question more exactly than I could.
I'm not saying you might answer this question. An agent is who sells a policy. The company is on that policy is acting on behalf of Standard Insurance or whatever insurance company. So if there's a mistake made, this agent, the company is still on and still responsible.
Yes. Company is responsible for the act of the agent.
It's very difficult, though, to get any redress for just simply misinterpreting the insurance policy.
I understand. Very
against it. Yes. I was going to out the bill trying to do that, too, but to be absolutely sure, you have to have insurance policies in every language. Some people can read Japanese, some people can read English, and who do we stop? I think that we have to give some credibility to the company that an agent represents, and I can see lots of times even the people in this country that have lost huge fortunes that probably can't read too well. I think that you think of them that they're not too worried about when they buy a policy.
One complaint that Senator Winslow related is a sentence that contains 60 words, these long sentences for which they're difficult for the average citizen to interpret. And your answer was that there's a law by the court that's determined that this language in the policy is correct and it's been determined. Has this language been determined nationwide? Are all your policies, life insurance companies, nationwide the same language, or a standard insurance policy written in a different language, say for a 23 life
until they're written in a different way. Now, I didn't respond to Senator Levi's statement that he proposed to sentences of 60 words. I would be too, and I'd be very embarrassed if we have some in our policies. There may even be some in the bill. I don't know some of the bills that I've seen too.
Well, if your company is not, if this doesn't affect your company and you're abiding, we have a good policy here, you don't have 60 word sentences, then how would you oppose this bill?
Well, there may be some requirements of the Oregon law that we have to put into our policies. Remember that
are you saying that what you're doing, what your company is doing with the policies is consistent with what other companies are doing? Do you still have out there policies that are extremely difficult to read?
I think that in visiting with some of the people who are sponsoring the bill, they were primarily concerned with other than life insurance. Doesn't mean to the exclusion of life insurance. I think they had some complaints on on there too. It's very wrong. I think the representative of the insurance department should probably be more specific as to the area of complaint. But I do want to emphasize again that all insurance policies, all of our policies, have to be submitted to every insurance department in which they're licensed to do business, and be reviewed by them before we can use these such policies.
Thank you, Craig, for any further questions. No, Senator Roberts.
Thank you, Chairman. I think the area of the section in law that happens to be covered coincidentally by Senate Bill 269 that relates to unconscionable tactics in trade practice. I read this one phrase that is in Senate Bill 269, which is unconscionable tactics include but are not limited to actions by which a person takes advantage of the customer's physical and human ignorance, illiteracy, or inability to understand the rules of the agreement. And I was wondering if you felt that something which again, at present, is not allowed for an individual action but allows for a class action, if I'm correct, that statute is sufficient to provide the protections that this is every bill of aims at providing.
I'm not familiar with that, sir, Senator.
Well, Senator, let's get into the same thing.
Howard, when he's looking to answer that, Senator Roberts.
Thank you, Senator. This is, these two bills are related in that point, which is that the main concern is that a customer of an insurance policy due to physical infirmity or inability to understand the rules of the agreement might not be due to the phraseology, the executive language, or it may be due to the individual customer's inability to join the agreement. And I was wondering if you could get a clarification as to whether or not the relationship between the unconscionable tactics provision and the concern that this bill is attempting to address.
Well, I think testimony was if you had read his policy.
If it were not in the best interest of the public,
I think this is the reason people generally have, they don't like the insurance company. They don't care much about insurance companies, but they do have confidence in their agent and their policy. And I think this is, would reflect my view of my little experience I've had in the business for probably about 30 years.
I think I mentioned some of the Robert's points. I certainly would share your feeling that it would be unconscionable for somebody to take advantage, and I would not want to be done anything that would permit that kind of situation to go on.
It's
cool.
Insurance policy is obviously a contract, and ideally a contract is about a debt after arms length bargaining, no debt escalation, and so forth. And in the contract, states the exact terms and says, well, don't you feel how what it would be in the interest of the insurance companies to have something that's readable, easily understood? I have policies, some of about 25 years or better. I've never read them, and they're formidable. I don't know if they've improved much recently, but I'm reluctant to call up the insurance agent. And so I just don't do anything with them. Those people are doing a better interest story and actually making some progress if they were readable, so that if a person were saying fine, he could read them and not have to call up the agent. And actually serve the industry better by having, if you have a situation where the document could be paired with batteries and things and so forth, and the person out there who's paying the premium is probably going to talk to a lawyer in most cases about the poor people or even, had too much opinion, in particular life policies, to discuss them with a lawyer. Don't you think it'd be just progress?
I agree 100%, and I hope that my testimony didn't indicate anything to the officer. My company itself, I know during the 15 years that I have been with them, and I've had two task force working, there's just one objective in mind, to simplify the language, make it easier. It's a selling point. This is a competitive deal. The more simple you can make your policy, the better chance the agent has to sell that policy, and you're in competitive. Your competitive situation. So yes, there's no reason why an insurance company would want to deliberately put long sentences in or be misleading or have deceptive language in there. That would be self-defeating. That's not the way get a good reputation and try to stay in business and sell additional policies. The answer to your question is yes. We want to do this. I don't know enough about the thrust test to know that if something passes that's going to do all of the things that the law says has to go into a policy and be readable. I see nothing wrong with it. The commissioner wants to experiment with it and some policy, but the mandate that all of them have to reach this score of 60, so that when part of what goes into a policy is the state law that's mandated in there, the insurance company hasn't got any choice about putting those sections into the policy. And with some of the other insurance casualty side, the main side, I think even have more mandated language than the life does if they're health that goes into the policy. I'm on your side. I don't want the court to be opposed to the objectives of this bill. We certainly support the objectives of the bill. We've just been doing that and have. If you could take a look at our own contract over a period of time, we've seen the changes. Every change has been for the better, for the simplification.
When you contemplate attempting to simplify, have you hired some good reading experts who can help you reformulate things down in more simple language, or have you just hired lawyers to read out the contracts and suggested that they work on it?
I mean, we haven't hired lawyers. We've hired our own people, but the end result has to go to the attorneys, the general counsel, to make sure that
are your own people trained in simplifying language?
Well, certainly not to the extent that anybody like Dr. Fletch here. I think that we do have the benefit of what other companies are doing. We can pick up where we see the points and characters.
To bring somebody in who is an expert in doing this stuff.
Not to my knowledge.
Any further questions?
Yes, Senator
Waters. If Senator Wingard could do one of two things, one, show you that you already were complying completely with the standard that he's trying to set with this bill, or two, amend his bill to set you as the standard insurance company as the formal leader in this reform already, which it sounds like you may be. I don't know that that's true. It sounds like you might be. When would you be able to support the bill?
Well,
you want to win the competition. You just don't know the position that I have. I kind of wear two hats. I'm a corporate secretary at the standard insurance company and represent them, but I also represent the American Association of Life Insurance Companies, some 500 companies, and I wouldn't want them to think that we're going to impose on them something in Oregon that we can, it's easy for us to put to. Now all of them are going to have to change their policies that they sell in Oregon to meet a standard that's peculiar to standard insurance company, right? And if we did it, I would be taking an unfair advantage of
it. If we did it without your insistence, you wouldn't mind, though.
Is that some questions?
No other further questions?
Okay.
Maybe the commissioner's coming on.
First of all, I just want to say that I appreciate the Senate Rules has been working on the Senate Bill 259 and wants to assist in forming a new opinion on the basis of enforcement tactics, which perhaps mainly trying to self-immunity insurance policy now that they couldn't write it, and perhaps using that to take advantage of it, would probably qualify, but because of the relief system is used in Senate Bill 259. And number two, I think it would mean that there would be management action would be based on a consistent policy of the company to do that. So this bill is an authorized an additional bill that was in the problem is not taken care of by 269 and the course of that. It doesn't indicate the need of enforcement that this could go to Senate on just the insurance industry, because I think that there's enough problem in the things that makes it difficult to discuss is the fact that it's more than just the insurance industry, it's everyone that does business that has contracts that use that are maybe things that people don't understand and so forth, and I can make that statement and change the terms so that I need to make it.
Thank you, Senator Roberts. One other, I think it would be helpful when Mr. Benson specifies his way to that we know he's going to have. Begin.
I didn't, but.
I think that Bill wouldn't have to give us that information at the time he did, but I don't think that knowing Bill Berenson for many years, I don't think he intentionally left that.
I think the kind of example he's making about one company that does a good job, standard, but being in an office speaking for other companies and using this as an example, and maybe some of those others for which you're also speaking don't do such a good job.
Companies have tried to protect themselves by this
The indefensible clause in the first place is a protection to the insured. It provides that after the policy is enforced 2 years, the company cannot contest the original validity of the policy except for certain things. And as I say, the mini court decisions on that provision, it is required of companies to have it in their policy. And so they've tried to limit it to the situations that are necessary for the protection of insurance, but it's a complicated provision, and you couldn't begin to write that provision itself in a trust test score 60 manner. And of course, other provisions are not for this book to write, and they've turned to really to say that. I think that. We would find a great deal of difficulty in some policies that giving a company the protection they need against the general way of ambiguities are construed against the insurance company. And that's the reason for many of the complicated phraseologies that you find now. Availability of insurance is a problem, and I just think we'd be aggravating the availability, you know, even if we made it that much more difficult for the companies to file and get approval on their policy form. It's not to say that companies are not working toward improvement, and that the National Association of Insurance Commissioners isn't working toward improvement. The Insurance Services Office has just filed a policy with us recently on auto insurance. I don't think it's yet become effective, but it is said to meet a first score of 40, I think it is, something like that, which is companion bill to this thing that is a good mandate for auto policy. But I think that these improvements, these advances, can best be made through pressures of the insurance commissioners and through selective application of policy approval standards, and even by issuing a rule on it rather than legislation of this kind.
You would have that authority now, would you not?
The law now says that the commission shall not approve a policy if it is unintelligible. Many of you overlooked that statute on two occasions, but I think if
it must be unintelligible to those that, you know, that don't that have to wear glasses.
Well, I don't think we ever normally approved a policy that wasn't intelligible, but sometimes I find something that I have a question about.
Yes. Otherwise,
I was wondering how you would unknowingly approve one that wasn't intelligible. Would that be due to you not reading it, or?
Well, I'll probably not reading it thoroughly, just assuming that it was barely paid and why bother with it. You know, we get thousands of forms every month, and we've got one man reading the property and casualty forms and one man reading the life and health forms. And he couldn't read every word that comes in. He skips over some of it, I'm sure.
So we just understand that the insurance commission doesn't read policies either. Okay.
Not word for word in every instance.
Anything further, Frank? James, go ahead, you had a question.
Yeah. Do you know anything about the Pennsylvania state situation?
Not specifically on this issue. I knew that Commissioner Vandenberg was famous for his experiments, and many of his were flopped, but I don't know about this one.
You don't know that?
No.
But does the commission really do anything in this area in terms of trying to improve the readability of policies?
Representative on the committee that is working on the readability issue.
that we are on other committees, and that committee represents us.
But at the state level, you're not doing anything.
Identified as a problem. I think a lot of policy holders out there maybe do identify it as a problem. We do use it in a peripheral way, such as our recent rule on the sale of health insurance policies that supplement Medicare or Medicaid. We have issued a rule requiring a certain outline in comparison of the Medicare benefits and the policy benefits. It's an attempt to get better disclosure to people. The health insurance policy itself is practically 100% statutory language. So basically, what you're saying is really, it's not doing anything at state level other than what's being done.
Do it. And if it's really, if this could be made easier?
I'm sure that there isn't a contract print and it couldn't be made better. And it's one thing to require the company to give you a reason to score. You know, that's just a matter of going to the commission and seeing what they tell you. But, you know, to say that the commissioner has to, in effect, judge the readability of these policies in some kind of a discretionary way would be an impossible task for the commissioner.
What would be a possible task? What could you do to make this possible to help your office in making it easier for the insuring public to understand a policy?
Do
you have any suggestions?
Yeah, my suggestion is that if you feel this is a problem area, that you should put in a requirement that policies be readable under objective standards formulated by the insurance commissioner.
Would you offer that amendment to the committee over next
year? Yes, I would be happy to prepare it for the
committee. Any questions? Well, is that going to have less fiscal impact than Senate Bill 606? I mean, it's like Senate Bill 606 passes the burden on to the insurance companies and then the consumers, and wouldn't necessarily have to go through ways and means. Well, the same thing is, you guys with an amendment, because they aren't tooled up, they only got two people reading these things. I shudder to think of what these people do when they get home at night to try and get themselves ready to come back to work the next day, as it is. But if we're going to add more in this whole area, and especially to actually take an affirmative Jim had asked him about the capabilities of the department under your amendment, would it be costly?
I would try to read the amendment so it wouldn't be.
Could I ask another question? I'm sorry, Dad, I'll ask. If you read it in such a way it wasn't costly, that old saying, I don't think this is in the Bible, you get what you pay for. You've already shown me, and I don't know if I'm interpreting you, but you've shown me some ambivalence about the importance of this problem. Although you said if you feel it's a problem, you'll think it's a problem. If we don't spend much money on it, is much going to happen?
Well,
it would be a pretty good job to start writing, for you to start writing maybe on all the insurance companies in Oregon, getting the right things and just plain old English. It's taken the legal profession how many years to help insurance companies learn how to write when they get
a there's nothing more time consuming than writing in a simple fashion. We're not making a big inroad on our own with our own efforts here. But I do think that an enforcement of a readability requirement, selective enforcement, and making, you know, withdrawing approval of a form here and there would accomplish quite a little bit with a relatively small expenditure. I don't think a 100% review of all forms and the application of a high level of readability standards would be possible with any kind of funding that anybody would want the insurance division to have. It would be all disproportionate to the benefits from it, I feel. But I think we could probably achieve something with a fairly small expenditure.
Very figure for the department on hammer, would it not?
Right.
Any further questions? If not, thank you. Frank, great thing.
I'm Joe Cooney for the American Insurance Association. I think I've explained to the committee before that the association, the crew association, of some 125 companies writing all types of casualty, surety, workers' compensation insurance. We have indicated that we're opposed to the bill, but like Mr. Hollett and the other witnesses, we are in favor of the concept. George Vinbard, Sandy Vinbard, held aloft for the view of the committee a form of easy reading policy for Board 44 on the flesh test. I learned him that, and I asked him to give it back to me so I could wave it in front of you to show what has been done so far by my class. They have, many of its members are in turn members of Insurance Service Office, which is a rating organization, filing rates on behalf of casualty companies. And about 25% of the casualty business is represented by ISO, Insurance Service Office. And about another 25% are subscribers to it. Not members, but subscribers. ISO has filed the easy reading policy in, with respect to automobile insurance. The commissioner has said is the most bothersome problem. Now in the Office of Insurance Commissioner. So, as a people, we're in favor of the easy reading policy. We hope we don't have to define it. And again, we support the Office of the Insurance Commissioner in his statement that there should not be a form of bill passed as 606 in order to bring this about. But it should be in a rather broadly drawn language suggested by the Insurance Commissioner. I might say that I have, like five people have given me suggestions of language about a sentence long, which can give the Insurance Commissioner that authority. We feel that he does really have the authority now, but just to tie it up and to hold his nose to grindstone a little more in this direction. We might suggest that the committee feels it appropriate to offer this as an amendment to the proposal. The real burden is that the bill is going to affect some time in the near future, and it will just be in effect a great number of and variety of insurance policies. And it will be very difficult for the insurance industry, just for this one state of Oregon, on homeowners and a number of other types of comprehensive coverages, just in a casualty field, leaving out accident, health, and life, and other type policies, to really put this thing all put together on file and approved by the Office of Insurance. I don't feel that any compulsory about that should be postponed for another 2 years. We are moving. We are ahead of the field, we're ahead of the game. The way we think that the easy reading policy is the greatest thing, and we support it, and we think that we can solve it. We think the ISO form is, it may be not ideal, because in two areas it does not, clearly it doesn't comply with the FLISH test, because the sentences are too long. They have to be not more than 4 inches. The paragraph can't be more than 4 inches in width, and I think this is about 5 inches. FLISH also requires 2 spaces between a word, and you have 1 space between words, some words. So, but those things can be changed. So we feel that we're moving in the right direction. I think that you fellows will find that the industry is in the right direction with this. We are working in cooperation with the task force of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, which has this matter under study, and is, has come up with a proposal, I understand it, which is with respect to the auto policy, similar to the one that George Wingard submitted to. And so, in essence, we feel that this bill should not be passed. That the insurance commissioner, if he does not have the authority, be given it in a one sentence type of legislation. I'm sure you'll find that the insurance is important.
Any questions? If not, thank you, George. That was a good hearing on the Senate bill. And we're going to put Bill 618, and that's the last one. We're going to put 626 over on our next hearing. We'll hold it some members have to attend another committee meeting. So then I will ask Jim Montague of the Oregon Liquor Agents Association to please come forward. And introduce your guest.
I'm Jim Montague, representing the Oregon Liquor Agents Association. I have with me Mr. Percy Mulgard, who is a liquor agent, runs an agency in South Salem. Mr. Mulgard is just along today to answer any questions you might have that could be better answered by an agent. Senate Bill 618 was introduced at the request of the Liquor Agents Association. It's a rather simple bill which would legalize a practice that's been ongoing for many years. There are 192 liquor stores in the state of Oregon, and presently 172 of them are run by independent agents. These agents are paid on a percentage of the gross sales coming out of that of their store. They're paid 9.5% of this $10,000 of sales, 4.5% on those sales between $10,000 and $20,000, and 3% on additional sales. These percentages have been set by the Joint Ways and Means Committee in a budget note. This method of payment has been in existence for a number of years, but it has come to our attention that the statutes as they are presently written probably prohibit this system. Senate Bill 618 has removed that prohibition. In addition, agents are required by the OLCC to sign a contractual agreement which establishes certain conditions under which their stores will be operated. The new language would probably tend to formalize such negotiations of such agreements. The last line of the bill states that agents' compensation shall be fixed by the Legislative Assembly. I think the OLCC is going to have some problems with that. We don't really feel that strongly about that particular sentence. Presently, the Ways and Means Committee is reviewing recommendations by OLCC and then setting the percentages. I think the agent's fear is that perhaps the with the new language, perhaps the OLCC would establish a percentage in a contract and sort of take it out of the purview of the Legislative Assembly. But we would be willing to see that last sentence deleted.
You're willing to delete that last sentence of your amendment to the Commission Bill 0.8 in the sale of such liquor under such agreement as the Commission may negotiate with that agency or representative. I know the agent's compensation is a particular head for the center.
You're
willing to delete that. Okay. But you're still, it seems to me, you're still up there for your Ways and Means.
I would be not.
I think probably,
Anyway, that would be the Legislative Assembly that still make that determination.
Now, that's what we're hopeful of.
I would assume that that would be the case.
But not on a percentage admission basis. That's the language that's being deleted, right?
Yes.
On an admission basis now?
Yes, that's what I say. This has been ongoing for years and years. OLCC is establishing the budget based on a percentage basis. The Ways and Means Committee has made recommendations to lower that or leave it the same or whatever. I don't know why the language is still there.
Because they're not, I see something here from the record commission.
Mm-hmm.
Is it even meaning?
So high.
Jerry, if you come up here and I think that there's a problem with your use, and you're in the USLC or the commission?
Well, I'm going to be
I think that you could probably be helpful to admit that
With that language being deleted, that language is being deleted, though, it seems to me that you would not put on a percentage of commission basis. If you wouldn't be allowed to pay on a commission basis under that the language that's being deleted from this. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, if that language is to be deleted, and I think the commission is in agreement with the Liquor Agency Association and the Department of Human Decision at this, if the last sentence is to be deleted, we would be effectively doing, we would be doing exactly what this sentence so, you have been doing for years, the legislative approved budget, and you've always followed that, and then the legislature has seen fit to raise the amount of money during the budget for an increase in agent compensation. The commission has always followed through with that immediately at the beginning of the new government. And I think the gentleman here, Christian, who has been working for some years, can agree to that.
Well, you'd have no objection if you would delete that. There wasn't agents compensation.
The commission would
welcome that.
Welcome that very much.
Okay. Any other call?
Now, why was that sentence put in there again?
I believe I can answer that. The agents had a fear that, see, they negotiate agreements with the Liquor Commission now, but those agreements say nothing about how an agent will be paid. Rather, they deal with conditions under which a store would be operated. And some agents feel that without actually stating in the law that the legislature would fix the compensation or its review, that perhaps the commission might at some point just put some percentage figure in a contractual agreement and take this compensation from the review procedure or if that was the fear. And it's probably, maybe an investment.
Mm-hmm. Do you know any reason why anybody would oppose this change? You're saying actually it's now being done except for changing the language. Is there any reason why anybody would oppose it?
No.
Do you know any group that opposes it?
No.
Do you know if there are any news people would be in favor of having a language?
I would certainly think. The commission and the Ways and Means Committee are right now paying this individual. And if somebody raises that 5 years down the road and says, you just can't do that anymore, it's probably good.
That's not the game from the office,
yeah. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. I need to respond to that by pointing out that since the 1969 legislative session, I know from my own direct knowledge that whenever the Ways and Means recommended an increase in the agent's compensation for a rate change, the commission immediately put that into effect whenever that legislative approved budget had been offered. This is during July 1 of the year. And we very much support the idea of deleting the last sentence of this. I think that it gives us we're doing basically what this last sentence does right now, that so if we can delete it, we will also eliminate some perhaps some technical difficulties. For example, from time to time, the legislature approves through the budget bill the opening of new agents. And you have a problem if you open a new agent because you don't know what the compensation will be until after the fact. You have no history. You have situations where you could have, for example, there's a good before Congress to raise the liquor tax. And this could have some kind of an impact. But I think that we are, at the present time, carrying out the intent of the last sentence and have been. And I'm directly aware of this since 69.
Any further questions?
If not,
do you have a coin?
Yes, we do.
Or any further
questions? Yeah, we have a letter from that area. I see Kenneth Underdahl signed it, and his statement of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission support Senate Bill 618 in general, particularly as it relates to elimination of compensation agents on a commission basis. Is that true? It appears to me that the bill is taking out the language which prohibits compensation on a commission basis and would allow it exactly that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Romney, this letter was written basically in support of the bill. This bill eliminates the current prohibition of paying of the compensation on a commission basis. And we support this bill at that point. But then, if you read further, the last.
Yeah.
Actually, in violation of the law for 30 years because you were paid on a commission basis and we're just making it legal now.
Mr. Kent, you are absolutely correct. We have been hanging our hat on the informal AP's opinion, I think it's 62.
Yes, I need the amendment. I move the adoption amendment. Any objections to that deletion of agent compensation of this before the legislative assembly with none of the state aid? Senator Crow?
Can you
move the bill to support? Senator Crow, move the bill to the bill to be recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Jensen?
Yes.
Yes. Senator Roberts? Senator Crow?
Aye.
Senator Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Kenny?
Aye. Senator Crow, will you carry this bill in the lack of it, for almost the lack of it, and we'll adjourn.
Yes, thank you.